This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Change at the top. The longtime CEO of General Electric is stepping down. A GE veteran is stepping up, and investors are cheering. Tech tumbles. The best performing sector this year extends its losses, but what happens next is up for debate. Supreme decision, a ruling by the highest court in the land, could make copies of biotech drugs available to consumers quicker. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Monday, June 12th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sue Herrera. Tyler Matheson is off tonight. The sell-off in technology shares intensified. We'll have more on that in a moment. But we begin tonight with a changing of the guard at General Electric. Chief Executive Jeff Immelt will end his tenure this summer after nearly 17 years. Immelt engineered a shift in the industrial company's focus, but was under pressure to increase the price of the stock, which is widely owned by long-term investors and mutual funds. Taking over the top job is GE veteran John Flannery, who heads up GE's healthcare division. Investors like the news, sending shares up 3.5%. Morgan Brennan has more on the future of GE, a company that was an original member of the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
The change at the top of General Electric comes after 16 years. Over that time, there have been many grumblings about the stock price, a fact that hasn't eluded the man soon to be in charge.
No one's happy with the stock price right now, or some of the cash, you know, pictures that we've had. We know we can be better at those things. I want to focus on those things. So I'm going to do basically what I've done in the healthcare business, spend a lot of time early on with investors, with customers, with employees, listening. Hearing what, you know, people think about the company.
John Flannery is a 30-year GE veteran. He's held a number of top posts, including, most recently, head of healthcare, where he turned around the flagging business.
Analysts say on the heels of some disappointing financial metrics, the key will be how he plans to grow the company.
We're really looking for Mr. Flannery to take a deep dive in the business and really lay out the strategies and where the growth's going to come from, help reassure us on the cash flow, cash generation. And we'd also like to see some more information on just where the capital is going to be spent, capital allocation.
It also caps a dramatic 16-year tenure for Jeff Immelt, one that's included the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the financial crisis, and a flurry of deal activity that's fundamentally transformed the Dow component. In 2001, GE derived nearly half its profit from its financial arm. Today, thanks to Immelt, roughly 90% comes from industrial businesses instead.
He's engineered a tremendous strategic change in this company to move away from being a bank, which it was moving towards when Welch turned over the reins in 2001, and emphasizing high tech and much more innovation. And that takes time. Now, 16 years is a long time. So if I were to be critical, I'd say move too slowly, had to navigate two major crises. But it's going to be up to John Flannery to prove that all these strategies are going to work.
But the stock has performed poorly, down nearly 30% since Immelt took the helm in 2001, and lagging this year on concerns about cash flow and whether GE can reach its 2018 earnings target.
But shares did jump today, even as management added some levity to a high-stakes scenario.
Which talent would you most like to have?
Blues guitarist or dunk a basketball.
Okay.
Far off on both of those.
Or maybe.
Oh, yeah, no. I've gotten over that.
I was hoping for being a great CEO of GE.
Yeah. But, you know, I thought you already felt that way.
No.
Okay, so can I do this over again?
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan.
We're one for two today.
And a new CEO isn't the only thing that happened at General Electric today. The company also received regulatory approval for its merger with Baker Hughes. That deal was approved on the condition that GE sell its water and process technologies business. On Wall Street overall, there was renewed pressure on the technology sector. The Nasdaq posted its biggest two-day slide since December, and that took the rest of the market down with it. Apple was the worst-performing stock on the Dow Index, following an analyst downgrade today and a price target cut. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 36 points to 21,235. The Nasdaq was off 32, and the S&P 500 fell 2. But after outperforming the market this year, some say the pullback in the tech sector is healthy. Others say it is not. So we asked Bob Pisani to lay out both sides of that debate.
This sudden movement is generating a lot of healthy debate about whether the great technology run of 2017 is over. Tech, of course, has been the big mover this year, up 17% and far outperforming the 8% gain for the S&P 500. There are arguments on both the bull and the bear side on this. Now, the bears argue that tech is overowned, that it's oversaturated, or it's a crowded trade. It's all true, particularly those so-called FANG names, the Facebooks, Amazons, Apples, Googles, Netflix, Microsofts. But the big tech names are better capitalized and have more stable profits than their old counterparts during the dot-com boom. That doesn't mean they won't go down. They're just more stable. Bears do have one big point. These are traditionally cyclical stocks, which means they can be volatile. Investors are treating them more like old-fashioned safety stocks, like consumer staples with no volatility. That's a mistake, and we saw that on Friday. The bull's main argument is this. With a few exceptions, valuations of even big tech names is not excessive. True, some of the big names, the Facebooks and especially Amazon, they have price-to-earnings ratios way above the S&P norm of about 18. That's because the market is assuming very strong revenue growth for these companies, which is not proven to be wrong, at least not yet. And take the biggest name of all, Apple, which currently trades at about 16 times 2017 earnings. That's hardly inflated. Apple's had very high valuations in the past, but not today. Tech is strong because tech companies have plenty of new business opportunities. Think about it. There's the growth of artificial intelligence. There's robotics. There's genomics. There's cloud computing. There's self-driving cars. And the Internet of Things. No lack of opportunities for tech names. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
So let's turn now to our bull and our bear guests for more on technology. We have Daniel Flax, senior technology analyst at Neuberger Berman, who's our bull, who sees more room for tech to run, while our bear, Charlie Bobrinskoy, is the vice chairman at Ariel Investments, and he says some of the tech names do not deserve the run-up that we've seen. Gentlemen, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
You know, great to see you, Sue.
Charlie, I'm going to start with you. Bob laid out, you know, kind of both scenarios for us. You do not own the FANG stocks, the Facebooks, the Apple, the Google. Why?
Because if there's anything that history has shown us is that people are too optimistic and overconfident about their ability to see the future. And by definitions, these stocks are trading at 144 times earnings because people think they're very confident that these companies are going to grow massively in the future. And again, history just teaches us that in technology, yesterday's and even today's leader are not necessarily tomorrow's winner. Just look at IBM and all the big computer companies, MySpace and Microsoft, even Microsoft, which was the leader so far ago. So it's just a tough industry to predict, and therefore it shouldn't pay 144 times earnings for it.
All right. Daniel, what about that? I mean, you mentioned in my notes at least that if you focus on companies that can disrupt and can look through some of the noise that we're seeing today, a pullback in tech might be a good buying opportunity.
Thanks, Sue. At Neuberger Berman, we try and take a longer-term view on this. And so while we expect a lot of these shares, including Apple, to remain volatile, we think there's certain elements that are underappreciated. So, for example, with Apple, you have a very strong ecosystem which is underappreciated by the market. And as we look out over the next 1 to 2 years, we think growth could improve driven by the new iPhone 8, which is likely to come in the fall. We would also add that Apple's revenue and profit pool is more stable, I think, than people appreciate, helped partly by their services growth.
What about that, Charlie? You know, some of these companies do have, to use Daniel's words, an ecosystem that is well developed.
Well, sure, that's what they always say. But if we were having this conversation 15 years ago, it would have been about how the BlackBerry has this wonderful ecosystem. Everyone had a BlackBerry in the business world 15 years ago. Now nobody does, and the stock is virtually gone. Apple is earning more than half of its profits from phones, from hardware. And there is just no predictability that they're going to be the leader in 10 years from now in phones. I'm predicting that they actually won't be.
Interesting. Daniel, what about that point? I mean, mentioning the BlackBerry certainly does bring back those days when everybody did have them, and that was the tech stock that everybody had to own. How do you make sure that when you do add a tech stock or when Neuberger adds a tech stock to the recommended list, that you have something that is going to have longevity?
I think what distinguishes Apple from BlackBerry is that Apple has been able to build a platform upon which others are able to build and create. And so Apple builds integrated systems, which include the hardware, the software, and the services. But the key is that the developer community has really been able to build on top of that. And so Apple has paid out over $70 billion to developers over the last several years. And so by bringing others along with it and helping to create a differentiated user experience, this, in our view, is what's going to help Apple attract new customers and, of course, get their installed base to continue upgrading.
You know, Charlie, I know we've had a pullback in the NASDAQ for the last few days or so, and in some cases, on some stocks, it's been a little bit worse than others. But a number of these stocks have been big winners for the year. Do you worry about missing out on that kind of growth?
No, you want to be selling what others have been buying and buy what others have been selling. And clearly, you're absolutely right. Apple has benefited from this big move into index funds and the S&P. Apple is the biggest name in the S&P. So when people move money into an S&P index fund, that fund is forced to buy more Apple than anything else. So as money's flown into indexes, it's flowing into Apple. And that's what pushed all of these big tech names up. When that slows down, and it will, you're going to lose the big tailwind that you've had behind these names.
Daniel, have you been adding to your tech positions with the downdraft that we've seen Thursday, Friday, and today, or no?
So we can't speak to what specific funds are doing, but what I would say is that if you look back over time, many of these technology companies' shares have been volatile. At Neuberger Berman, our focus is really on the fundamentals. So, for example, we are looking for significant earnings growth out of Apple over the next 1 to 2 years. Alphabet is another name that we think has attractive earnings growth prospects. Cisco, which is a name where the shares are inexpensive, has been a contrarian name. That's a company that we continue to like, driven by changes to its underlying mix. And so while the indices are at record highs, we are really looking for names that we think can outperform virtually regardless of the market environment, which, again, we expect is going to remain pretty volatile.
All righty. On that note, gentlemen, thank you. Good discussion.
Thanks,
Daniel Flax with
Neuberger
Berman and Charlie Bobrinskoy with Ariel Investments. A second federal appeals court ruled against President Trump's revised travel ban. The new ruling from a three-judge panel affirms a March decision to block major parts of the order, which limited travel from six predominantly Muslim countries. The judges wrote that the order exceeded the scope of the authority designated to the president by Congress. The ruling will likely be appealed to the Supreme Court, which is already considering a similar case. There are a few other stories as well out of Washington that investors need to be keeping an eye on. Not surprisingly, John Harwood is here to talk about them with us. John, it's good to see you as always. So let's start with Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, testifying tomorrow on Russia. Why should investors specifically be watching closely?
Well, this is key testimony in the investigation for the Senate Intelligence Committee, and it may factor into the special counsel's investigation as well, because Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, has been involved at both ends here. First of all, he had undisclosed meetings with the Russian ambassador that he had not initially told Congress about when he was up for confirmation. And then, in addition to that, having recused himself from the Russia investigation, he was involved in the firing of James Comey, who's leading that investigation. This is a scandal that has the potential to destabilize the administration, and Jeff Sessions, by testifying in public, is raising the stakes.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. What about the impact that this might have, the investigation, the testimony, et cetera, on the president's agenda, most immediately, health care, tax reform? Last week was Infrastructure Week. How will that be affected, if at all?
The danger, Sue, is that the administration gets in a negative downward spiral. Gallup today had the president's approval rating at just 36%. There's a special election coming up in Georgia in 2 weeks, to fill the seat that Tom Price vacated, the HHS secretary. If you see the president continue to go down, it makes it more difficult for Republican members of Congress to stand with him on his priorities, like health care, like tax reform, like infrastructure. And you could get into a situation, if he continues to erode in his popularity, where it's every person for him or herself in Washington, and that is not the kind of unified front that Republicans need to push these agenda items through Congress and get them on the president's desk.
We will be watching closely, John. Thank you, as always.
You bet.
John Harwood in Washington. Still ahead tonight, did the Supreme Court just help get some drugs to patients sooner? Across the globe and Qatar, financial markets there stabilized after a week of losses. This as the government shows it can keep things up and running despite being sanctioned by its neighbors. In an exclusive interview with CNBC, the Qatari finance minister dismissed fears of an economic crisis and stressed his country's resilience.
If you look at what's happened, sometimes a lot of people think that we're the only one to lose in this. I don't think so. Qatar is a very strong economy, and it's a big economy. And I think if we're going to lose the dollars, they will lose the dollars also. And I think there's a lot of business among everybody around us. So I think I always like to have it a win-win situation. But this incident, it's very unfortunate. It's put a lot of life, especially the human people's in difficulties. Families are being disrupted around these countries. This is not the measure that we wanted to take. It was forced on us. It was taken by other countries. But I always say that Qatar is always open for business. We'd like the people that they live here. They have all the respects. And they have a full accessibility in actually getting in and out of the country at their preference.
As we've reported, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the UAE, and Egypt are among the leading Arab governments who've cut ties with Doha last week. Puerto Rico votes to be the 51st state, but the legitimacy of that result is being questioned because the turnout was so low. The governor, however, said that he will create a commission to appoint a panel to lobby Congress for statehood. Congress now has to approve any changes to the island's political status. Puerto Rico is in the midst of a financial crisis. It has a debt load of $70 billion and last month filed for the largest municipal bankruptcy in the U.S. A clothing retailer has joined the ranks of many other of its peers. Gymboree has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. This comes just weeks after it partnered with a turnaround firm after missing a June 1st debt payment. The company says it expects to move through the process quickly and emerge as a stronger organization. IMAX is cutting 14% of its workforce. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The movie theater company announced a $20 million cost savings plan, which includes eliminating approximately 100 positions worldwide. IMAX also announced a new $200 million share buyback program. Shares of IMAX fell a dime to $24 even. FedEx raised its quarterly dividend to 50 cents per share, up from its 40 cents per share. Investors like the news, sending shares of FedEx up more than 1% to $209.12. Merck said that it would pause new enrollment in two late-stage studies of its immunotherapy drug Keytruda, used in combination with other treatments for multiple myeloma, which is a form of blood cancer. The stoppage was at the recommendation of an external data monitoring committee to allow more information to be collected to help understand why some patients died given the therapy. Keytruda is approved for lung and skin cancer. Shares of Merck initially dropped in after-hours trading. They were unchanged in the regular session at $64.39. And shares of Coherus Biosciences plunged after the FDA failed to approve a biosimilar drug that helps prevent infections for cancer patients who are on chemotherapy. Coherus Biosciences finished down nearly 24% at $15.73. A ruling by the Supreme Court today could have wide-ranging implications for the pharmaceutical industry. The court's decision speeds up the time that copycat versions of biologic drugs can get to market. Biologics are an expensive class of medicines that can boost sales for the drug companies. Biosimilars are copycat versions of those drugs. Meg Terrell is following this story for us, and she joins us here on the set. Always good to see you, Meg. So what was the case that the Supreme Court specifically ruled on?
That's right. So this case is called Sandoz versus Amgen, and Sandoz is a unit of Novartis. And essentially, it was over Amgen's drug, Neupogen. That is a biologic drug. Often, biologic drugs are administered through shots or intravenously. They are administered, they're manufactured using living cells. And so biosimilars are those copycat versions of biologics. And the industry calls them biosimilars because they argue because of the way they're manufactured, they're not identical. But we basically think of generic drugs as sort of identical versions of the chemical versions of drugs. So, it's
so that's
sort of,
the kind of equivalent.
That's the idea. And so what this ruling did today was essentially overturn a lower court's ruling that gave a six-month delay before when a biosimilar could be introduced to market after it got approved. It said no delay needed there. As long as you give the notice to the manufacturer early, you can launch. So it basically wiped out that six-month delay that would still continue to allow accrual of sales for the original manufacturer.
So what are the broader implications for the drug industry?
So this essentially will have implications down the line as a lot of these new drugs are introduced to market. Right now, we only have about five biosimilars currently approved in the United States, and some of them are still working their way through legal battles. But as we see more and more of these biosimilars be introduced, it will mean that they'll come to market a little bit sooner and cut into the original manufacturer's sales more.
Have you gotten any reaction yet from either the drug companies or, you know, the broader medical community that is using these products?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The reaction was a little bit muted. This has been a very long process to figuring out how to get biosimilars to market. It's actually taken years to continue figuring it out. Probably the strongest reaction we saw today was from the payer community, from, you know, the pharmacy benefits managers who are encouraging use of these lower-priced medicines. However, what we've seen is when these are introduced, maybe they're only introduced at a 10 to 15% discount to the original drug. So it's not that gigantic cost savings you're looking
to see. Right. I was wondering about that because the drug companies have been under such scrutiny about cost increases, and the pharmacy benefit managers are right in the middle of that. So maybe a little bit of a benefit, but not an extreme benefit for the consumer.
That's right. At the beginning, we're seeing them introduced at these kind of smaller discounts than you might expect to see. But people say as we see more and more of these entering the market, that competition should bring prices down overall. That's going to be a little ways off, but we're headed in that direction.
Well, you'll be following it, I know.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Meg.
Thank you, Meg Terrell.
Coming up, hitting the gas. While Uber struggles, rival Lyft is quietly making some big moves. Here's a look at what to watch for tomorrow. It is day one of the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting. As we reported, Attorney General Jeff Sessions will testify in front of a Senate panel on Russia. OPEC will release an update on supply and demand trends in the oil market, and that is what to watch for on Tuesday. McDonald's wants to hire 250,000 workers in the U.S. this summer, and it's doing it in a very modern way. It's using Snapchat. The chain plans to run 10-second videos on the social media service of current employees talking about working at the company, at which point viewers can then swipe to McDonald's website and apply. There may be a new player in the U.S. grocery market. A German low-cost grocer called Aldi plans to invest roughly $3.5 billion to expand its store base. It's an aggressive plan that would make Aldi the third biggest supermarket chain behind Walmart and Kroger by the year 2022. The investment comes at a time of intense competition in that industry. Walmart, which is the largest U.S. grocer, is testing lower prices in 11 states and is expected to spend about $6 billion to regain its title as the low-price leader. Uber's chief executive will likely take a leave of absence. According to reports, no final decision has been made following a board meeting yesterday. The board met over the weekend to consider recommendations from an investigation into sexual harassment and related issues. A close ally of the CEO, Travis Kalanick, has left the ride-hailing company, making him the latest high-level executive to depart. Uber is a privately held company, but it is valued at roughly $70 billion. Well, while Uber continues to wrestle with high-profile legal and public relations problems, its rival Lyft is quietly making some strategic moves. The latest has Jaguar landing Land Rover taking a stake in Lyft, and Phil LeBeau has those details.
Uber may rule the road when it comes to ride sharing. But its rival Lyft is putting together an impressive group of partnerships that could pay off in the long run. That includes a new deal with Jaguar Land Rover. The luxury auto brands are investing $25 million in Lyft and will work with the rideshare company developing mobility services. The deal also calls for Jaguar Land Rover to supply some vehicles to Lyft drivers. This is the second automaker to take a stake in Lyft, following GM's investment of $500 million last year. At the time, many thought it would lead to Lyft working almost exclusively with GM. But since then, both companies have branched out to also work with other tech and transportation firms. For example, Lyft has also struck a deal with Waymo, the Google subsidiary that is leading the development of driverless vehicles. And just last week, Lyft announced it's working with the tech firm Newtonomy to test self-driving vehicles with paying customers in Boston later this year. Uber is also developing autonomous drive vehicles, testing them in Pittsburgh. But with the company embroiled in a number of controversies ranging from the culture of the firm to whether or not it's overcharging customers, the time could be ripe for Lyft to gain ground on Uber, especially if one or more of its partnerships takes off and leads the company to greater growth. It's estimated the majority of the rideshare business in the U.S. goes to Uber. Lyft says it has nearly 30% of the market. But as Lyft continues to expand and add new partnerships, it is slowly gaining ground on Uber here in the U.S. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
And that is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you right here tomorrow.